Christmas was rapidly approaching, and Gigi invited my friend Kelly to spend the holiday with us. Together, the three of us decorated my apartment. On Christmas Eve, we found a small Christmas tree, and on Christmas Day, we celebrated by going out to dinner at the local Denny's. It was the simplest yet richest Christmas Gigi and I ever spent together. I was alive and recovering, and that was all that mattered. Christmas was a day for rejoicing, but in 2 days I would walk into Massachusetts General Hospital to have my head cut open. From my perspective, there were two things I still needed to accomplish before surgery. One was mental, and the other physical. My language was slowly coming back, and it was important to me that I thank the hundreds of people who had sent me cards, letters, and flowers. I felt an intense desire to let them know I was okay, thank them for their love, and rally their continued prayers for what would come next. Folks from all over the country had signed me up for prayer lists and prayer circles ranging from local churches to the Pope's list. I felt incredible love coming my way, and I wanted to share my gratitude while I still had some linguistic ability. The greatest threat surgery posed was not only the loss of the language I had recovered, but also the loss of all future ability to ever become linguistically fluent. Since the golf ball-sized blood clot abutted the fibers running between the two language centers in my left hemisphere, it was possible that language might be excised during the surgical process. If the surgeons had to remove some of my healthy brain tissue while resecting the AVM, the consequence could be permanent loss of speech. I had come so far in my recovery that the mere possibility of this setback was chilling. But in my heart, I knew that whatever the outcome, language or no language, I would still be me, and we would begin again. Although I failed miserably at reading and writing with a pen, left hemisphere, right hand, I could sit at my computer and type a simple letter, both hemispheres, both hands, that followed my stream of thought. It took me a very long time as I hunt and pecked at the keyboard, but somehow my body-mind connection made it happen. The most interesting thing about this experience was that after I finished typing the letter, I was not capable of reading what I had just written, left hemisphere. Gigi edited the letter and sent it out the night following my surgery, along with a handwritten note. Since my recovery, I have heard of many stroke survivors who, although they could not speak, left hemisphere, they were capable of singing their messages, both hemispheres. I'm amazed at the resiliency and resourcefulness of this beautiful brain to find a way to communicate. I worked day in and day out to get my body strong enough to endure the very calculated hit of surgery. Yet, there was one more task I wanted to achieve before my head met the saw. 5 minutes up the street from my apartment was the Fells Way, a magnificent wooded acreage encompassing a couple of small mountain-like lakes. The Fells Way had been a magic land for me. Most days after work, I unwound by wandering the trails among the pines, and rarely did I see another soul. I would sing and dance and prance and pray there. For me, it was a sacred place where I could commune with nature and rejuvenate. I desperately wanted to climb that steep, slippery hill up into the Fells Way before surgery. I ached to stand on top of the gigantic boulders, spread my arms in the breeze, and feel the replenishment of my life force power. On the day before surgery, with Kelly by my side, I slowly climbed the hill and made my dream come true. There, atop the boulders overlooking the lights of Boston, I rocked in the breeze and breathed in long, strong, empowering breaths. No matter what the next day's surgery held, this body of mine was the life force power of trillions of healthy cells. For the first time since the stroke, I felt my body was strong enough to endure the upcoming craniotomy.